This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our health and living segment, and today we're talking about sleep. We always hear about sleep apnea and people doing a sleep test and all of that. Today's topic is a little different because we have Dr. John Ben Loy, US licensed marriage and family therapist, in the studio. And if he talks about sleep, you know roughly in what context.
What context is that, Mira? Very sleep? Suggestive. Very suggestive.
Never. This is your interpretation. I haven't said anything yet. Sleep problems, you and I know, it ranges from, and it's not limited to just insomnia, to snoring and sleep apnea, because they can affect the quality of your life and the individual. Now, the bed, partner, and the family unit as a whole is affected by your sleep issues. So we also have joining us today to share her views as a registered polysomnographic technologist. And she is Amy Ho. Amy is also part of the ASEAN Sleep Research and Competence Center at the UM Specialist Center. So we're going to be discussing sleep issues and how it impacts your relationship. Our phone lines are open. Just give us a call. The number is 0377-109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you today?
Very good, thank you.
I haven't done the show with you for a long time, Dr. John Ben. How have you been?
I have been very good, as we were saying. I've been to Hawaii and back. Yes. So I think half of me is still in Hawaii.
Okay.
Yes, my friends were saying, were you shaking your coconuts? I'm not really sure what she meant by that. But
you are not sure?
I am not sure.
And
I also don't know if I did or if I didn't. So.
Moving on to the sleep issues in relationships. Before we go on, Amy, maybe you want to just tell us what a polysomnographic technologist actually does. And you were the first.
Yes.
You were Malaysia's first polysomnographic technologist.
Yes, I'm the first RPHGT in Malaysia. Basically, what we do is we watch people sleep.
That's a pretty good job.
Yeah, but before we let them sleep, we will put on some wires on their body to monitor their biorhythms. So we basically monitor their sleep pattern, breathing, oxygen in the body, snoring if they have any, their heart rate, and how restless they are when they sleep. So we will be analyzing the data live while it's coming up from the computer. And we would translate the data into numbers so that the doctor can interpret the report better.
Okay, how much can you know about a person's sleep patterns just by looking at these graphs?
A lot. We actually know when they are awake, when they are falling asleep, when they are in deep sleep, and when they are in REM, rapid eye movement, which is the dream state. So we actually know what is going on. We're not that high-tech yet to know what they are dreaming yet. So we don't know what they are dreaming.
Okay.
But we know when they fall asleep and we know when they start dreaming and when they end their sleep.
Okay.
And when they are just going to wake up, also we know.
Do you see more and more people coming to do this polysomnographic test?
Yes. The awareness are increasing because the public now has with the IT, internet and stuff like that, they've been Googling up. And there are a lot of sleep problems in Malaysia because we Malaysians are up 24 hours.
Yes.
And it's not good.
Yeah, our 24-hour restaurants don't help. And for some reasons, we seem to be the sort who stay up quite late. And do you find couples coming to you, Dr. John Ben, because one person hasn't got enough sleep?
They don't usually come to me specifically complaining about sleep issues. They'll come to me when it's more serious. And sleep issues then show up, in the interview. But I don't think I've even had one that came, hey, we need to work out the snoring issues. Yeah, usually they'll go to a medical doctor or a sleep specialist for that.
Mm-hmm. The sleep issues can range from an ENT problem, Amy, it can range to a neurological problem, it can range
to psychiatry problem.
Exactly.
Weight problem.
Sure. And do you see, do you know why couples come forward?
Well, it's
sleep apnea, we know, because we know that people are unproductive in the day. They sometimes fall asleep at the wheel.
Yes.
And all of that. I mean, typical, we have some people in this country who we make fun of, which I really get upset about. But that's very a given. But in other areas?
Well, actually, sleep apnea affects around 80% of men. So we have
80% of all men.
Yes, all men.
That's a really high 80%?
Number. 80%?
Yes, wow. Yes. So snoring is not normal, actually. So when you start snoring, then it will affect the bed partner. Now, the sound will come to a point that it's as loud as a grizzly bear. So you can't sleep next to a grizzly bear every night, do you?
No. Definitely not.
So the spouse will be the one that dragging them in. Because I have couples coming in that saying that I can't stand it anymore. You have to go in and check or I'm going to ask for a divorce. I'm like, whoa.
That bad, huh?
You know? Or some even work things out like, all right, I'm going to sleep in another room and the bear sleeps in another room. So it happens that way. So,
okay. Yeah. And in other areas? Neurological?
Well, neurologically, we have, because sleep problems, they actually divided into around 4 or 5 categories. Insomnia is one of them. And then sleep apnea is under the sleep disordered breathing criteria. Mm-hmm. We have a narcolepsy, which is under neurological. Narcolepsy means that person will tend to fall asleep anywhere and everywhere. And it's because of their hormone imbalance. So they can't be too happy or too sad. They're just knocked out just like that. Fall asleep just like that. So it would be under the neurological problem. And also they have what they call periodic leg movements. That means when they want to fall asleep, their feet tends to be jerky or they have that creepy crawling feeling over the legs or arms. So it falls under neurological department as well. And there's also like sleepwalking, sleep talking. Well, it's not that bad unless, of course, you just have to take security prevention, you know, if a person tends to sleepwalk or sleep talk. Mm-hmm. So you just have to lock the door.
Right. You know, stuff and keep like that. The keys with
yes.
you.
Yes. If you have stairs, maybe you have that child gate there, installed there so that the fellow doesn't fall down the stairs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, circadian rhythm disorder, that will be in the shift work. Jet lag will be under the circadian rhythm disorder as well. So there are a few diseases where we clump them in into
categories.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as sleep disorders are concerned, there's a difference. When you say disorder, it usually is more serious compared to sleep deprivation, for an example. So how do you make that differentiation?
Well, sleep deprivation is serious because it can lead to accidents while driving, accidents at work, especially if you're driving the forklift or you're handling machinery. So we have seen, like in Malaysia, the reports of bus accidents actually is increasing. It's because of drivers are sleep deprived. They have to fulfill their quota for that day, or maybe they have to work overtime because of the festive seasons. So it is serious. Even sleep deprivation is serious.
It is.
Yeah.
I suppose. And we take that for granted, actually.
Yeah, people do.
Dr. John Ben, they say that you're at your most vulnerable and exposed when, you know, you're in bed with your partner. And could you just elaborate a little bit more? And how serious it would be if one partner is actually not happy? And we're not talking about intercourse or anything. We're just talking about, you know, coexisting, you know, sharing a bed with somebody.
Yeah. My former professor, Paul Rosenblatt, actually wrote a book. He called it Two in a Bed, The Social System of Couple Bed Sharing. And he's actually been writing helpful articles on Huffington Post on this. He talks a bit about safety with regards to sleep. And on two sides, one, sleeping together can provide safety, but it can also be a threat to safety. So being a threat to safety could be, for instance, when someone might be, typically it's the man who's going to be a bit more of a threat, you know, to the woman. In cases whereby you could be having a dream, you know, this actually happened to me. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Revelation
always,
time.
Always.
Yeah, I actually punched my wife in the face once.
Oh dear!
You're kidding
or
me.
Or maybe I think she'll say twice in the course.
And why did you do that?
I had a dream, and I was.
You're a very disturbed boy. I've said this from day one. You know, always.
I've always said I'm a work in progress. Right? We're all learning, Mira.
Shall we talk about intercourse now?
Have you gone to Amy? Have you gone to Amy and done a polysomnography? I mean, you punched her twice. I
think so. I definitely remember once because she woke up and she was going, oh, she was asleep. And then I woke up and said, oh, was that a dream? Oh, I punched you? Oh, my God. And she was really scared to sleep next to me after that.
Right.
So, yeah, you can, be a threat. And, of course, if there is any kind of violence or abuse. I actually had a case where I had a client who was struggling with what looked like dissociative identity disorder. And the wife was reporting that when he was asleep, he would wake up with dreams with other personalities and once tried to choke her with another personality. That was pretty serious. I had to consult with psychiatrists on that one. On the other hand, sleep can also provide safety. You know, women being afraid to sleep alone, you know, having somebody else sleep with them, if it's not a man or it could be an animal, a pet or something like that. There's been cases with older couples whereby one could be having a heart attack or a diabetic shock or something like that. And then the partner recognizes that and lives have been saved through that. Yeah. So these are accounts that Paul Rosenblatt has written about. Okay. Very interesting.
Right. I mean, and we always leave out the person who's single.
Yes.
So how?
For the single person?
Yeah.
There are cats. Yeah. And he's written about cats too. You
know. And then he has cats and the couple bed.
That's right.
When you share a bed with an animal, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Would you say that's healthy or not?
Not for me, but I know lots of people who have dogs or cats, pets sleeping with them. And I think that's up to them, so long as they are able to have good sleep to begin
yes.
with. Mm. And this is where maybe Amy will have something
to say. Have you had experience with that?
That?
I mean, the pets not allowing you to sleep.
Yeah, I had cats in the house when my son was younger, 5 of them actually, and most of them tend to like to sleep with me. So when I woke up in the morning, there'll be one on my head, the other one under my knee, 2-3 by the side of me. So it feels warm and comfortable, but it limits movement. You can't turn much.
Yeah.
So,
that's interesting, Amy, because sometimes we think we have had enough sleep when actually we haven't. So with the cats, you may have felt you had enough sleep, but you probably didn't. So how do you solve a problem like that?
Well,
how do you even recognize the
signs of not having enough sleep is if we wake up in the morning and we feel tired, lethargic every day, irrespective of how much time we spend in bed. Because the National Sleep Foundation, they recommend for adults to have at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. So that's in research. So in daily life, as long as we wake up feeling fresh, gung-ho to feel the day, you know, do whatever things that we need to do, then it's fine. But if we wake up every day feeling tired, lethargic, then something is wrong. Something is wrong with the quality of sleep.
And it doesn't just affect the spouse, because it can affect the whole family as well. Dr. John Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of different issues with regards to sleep can affect the family. Amy was the one actually who told me about adolescents and their sleep
yes.
cycle
yeah.
changing. So now I'm a lot more patient with my daughter, who's a teenager.
I saw that article that
yeah.
they should be waking up later in the morning.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Later in the morning
yep.
and they sleep later at night too. Towards the early morning.
We shall not tell them all, but
good thing they're not listening
we
to
know.
BFM, right?
I never know. But as parents, if you understand it, then I think it really helps.
Yeah, I'm
but
a lot more patient now.
But they have to wake up in the morning to go to school, so that doesn't work well for them either.
Well, sleep hygiene for them, for the adolescent, sleep hygiene is important because it prepares them for the adulthood. So, of course, we can't put all the blame on them, but we can actually show them a good example, set the good example for sleep hygiene that they can actually bring it into adulthood. And that it will help them in their transition to adulthood, because when they reach adulthood means around maybe 22, 23, the body resets again back to 9 to 5, you know, where they can go to work 9 to 5. So with the good sleep hygiene, it helps the transition period. If not, they will tend to end up being insomniac patients.
Sure. And what is good sleep hygiene?
Well, good sleep hygiene is sleeping and waking up at the same time every day, every night, irrespective of holidays, school holidays, public holidays. So if you sleep at 10 at night every night, continue doing that even on public holidays and wake up at the same time as well. And of course, bedroom is for two things and two things only: sex and sleep, nothing else. No TV, no handphones, radios, no electrical gadgets, even clocks we don't recommend in the room, because some people tend to wake up in the middle of the night and see what time it is, so it interrupts sleep. What else? Have a sleep routine before going to bed. Kids, we have their sleep routine: warm shower, warm milk, and then go to bed. Adults also need sleep routines, because it tells the body and the mind that it's time to go to bed. So we have to align both of them. Because usually the body will be tired, but the mind says, oh, I've got so many things to do, you know, I have to plan for tomorrow, I have to finish up my work. So we need this routine so that it will calm the mind. It tells the mind, okay, it's time to go to bed, forget the rest, rest. Because the rest is important.
I don't even want to share my sleep hygiene with you.
Because please do, Mira.
It is a mess.
No, everybody wants to know.
It is not everything that Amy said. That's a huge concern now. And I can imagine there are a ton of people like me who really don't have sleep hygiene in that sense. Handphone, for an example, sits right next to me when I go to bed. And I can actually, because I'm such a light sleeper, I can actually wake up when it vibrates.
Wow.
And that can be 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and then you struggle to go back to sleep again.
Yeah.
And I need to sort this out badly, because
you can
I'm
see
concerned.
Amy too.
Yes, I can see Amy as well.
Let's all go together.
I don't have to go and see Amy. I just have to change my habits, don't I?
Yes.
But
sure.
It impacts relationships. It impacts the whole family.
Definitely.
Okay, we have problems.
Yes.
If you have a question on sleep, give us a call. The number is 0377109000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Whether or not it's in terms of your relationship, or whether or not you want to find out more about sleep hygiene or, you know, sleep patterns, give us a call right now. Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome
Absolutely.
To the show.
Feelings matter.
All
they
the time.
Do.
Especially when you sleep. Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, in the studio with me, together with Amy Ho. She's a registered polysomnographic technologist at the ASEAN Sleep Research and Competence Center in University of Malaya Specialist Center. Amy, tell me why. I'm very, very interested in this. Before I go to Amy, Dr. John Ben, also there's been articles about anger in the couple's bed, and how does that translate to sleep and relationship?
Yeah, I want to tackle that first. Yeah, so you know, people respond differently with anger, typically people who are angry, say in a couple fight, you know, would not want to stay close to each other. Either they'll distance themselves, some might put a pillow between the two, or if they share a blanket, then they won't share a blanket, or move out to, you know, somebody will move out. Then the decision is who goes, right?
Yes.
You know, who doesn't sleep in the bed. And this is the case. I hate to bring this up all the time, but I see it all the time in marital affairs. You know, in the recovery process, you know, the person who can't sleep and feeling it's injustice that I can't sleep because of your behavior will then wake up the partner and say, you know, you caused this, you have to listen to me for the next 3 hours, even though it's, you know, 4 a.m. in the morning, and the person is trying to cope with it, but still has to go to work the next day. So having anger issues, you know, difficulties, arguments is a big problem when it comes to sharing a bed together.
Okay. We have Naveen on the line. Naveen wants to share. Okay, before Naveen, we'll go to Chris Sivaprakash via Twitter. He's asking, what about the people who work shift hours, people who work 2 days, 2 nights, when they have troubles sleeping? How do you deal with that?
All right. For shift workers, we actually recommend them to do 4 nights and 3 days off. because for each night that we do not sleep, the body needs 2 nights to recover. So for shift workers, what I recommend is you can drink coffee for the first half of the shift because it will make you alert. All right. For the second half of the shift, try to refrain from drinking coffee because coffee effect stays in the body up to 4 hours. Because on the second half of shift, we would like be preparing to go back home. So we do not want the coffee effects to stay in the body. All right. That is one tip. And if you want to stay alert, you can have exercise 1 hour prior from starting work. All right. That will help you being alert. If another tip, if you want to go to bed, that means when you're going home, try to wear sunglasses. Avoid the eyes, sun rays getting into the eyes. Sunglasses will help. And the bedroom must have thick curtains. Make sure the room is comfortable. The temperature is also comfortable for you to sleep in. And quiet environment. That will help in the sleeping part.
Okay. And that helps regulate sleep patterns?
That helps regulate sleep patterns for the shift workers.
Okay. Yeah. It's always a difficult one, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just to come back to anger in the couple's bed, how do we manage the lack of sleep? I mean, and anger, it happens once in a while. It doesn't happen all the time. When do you know you need to come and get some help?
Well, when you're not having enough sleep and you're fighting and it's affecting your work, it's affecting your relationships, it's affecting your life functioning, basically, you know, seek help early so that you can get the benefits of recovery.
Okay. Are there any age differences as to how people cope with sleep and the quality of their life?
Yes, they do. For the elderly people, they have their sleep cycles tend to be early. That means they will go to bed early and they will wake up early. Early means at least like 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. So usually I will tell them it's normal. Don't stress it out. You can do your gardening or your hobbies. Read newspaper. It can help. Just don't put so much stress on falling back to sleep, because it usually doesn't work.
When you wake up at 4 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay.
Just relax and go about doing your stuff. When you do feel sleepy again, then only then you go back to bed. Because we have to associate bed with sleep. Nowadays, people do everything in bed. Mm-hmm. Doing work with the computer in bed, mm-hmm. you know, listening to radio in bed, eat in bed, watch TV in bed. That's not a good sleep hygiene.
How does that affect sleep patterns?
Well, because we have to associate the mind, bedroom is sleep. So if we tend to do a lot of things in the bedroom, so when we reach our bedroom, then our mind will be alert. Oh, I want to watch movie here. I want to read a book. I want to play games, you know. So the mind's not resting. So it affects the sleep pattern. And light from electrical gadgets actually delays sleep onset by 2 hours. So if you feel sleepy at 10 and then you watch a movie or you play your iPad or tablets, then you tend to fall asleep at 12 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. So it's already delaying the sleep.
What about reading?
Well, for some people, reading calms the mind, but some people don't. So it depends on the individual.
Okay. Have you done research at University of Malaya, or do we have any local research on sleep habits or hygiene?
We have a few research depending on like motor vehicle accidents. We have done research correlating sleep and loss of libido for both partners, either men or women. And then we have research that correlates sleep with snoring, because people think snoring is normal. Actually, it's not. It disrupts the sleep. So yeah, there are a few papers on that.
Let's focus on the loss of libido. What were your findings?
Well, snoring actually affects the sleep pattern and the sleep quality. And because of that, because our body actually recuperates itself in sleep, so, and repairs itself in sleep. And if when we don't get enough quality sleep, the hormones in the body go topsy-turvy. And in turn, it translates to loss of libido. They'll be too tired. you know, to have the mood there. So they'll just go back, work, have a shower, and go to bed. And that's it. So it really affects some marital relationships. Okay. Comes to a point.
And you think it's a larger problem when it's actually just the lack of sleep, isn't it?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I mean, you know, you think the loss of libido is usually, you know, due to something else, something medically driven most of the time, when actually it's as simple as not getting enough sleep.
It can be, yeah, but it can be more.
Yep.
You know, in dealing with that, I always say, you know, rule out medical issues first.
Yeah.
Rule out sleep issue first. You know, do that and then come back to talk to me if everything else is clear. Then it's relational or psychological.
Okay. Do you see many cases like that, Amy? As in loss of libido because of the lack of sleep?
Well, they don't talk about it, but the wife will be hinting on it. So,
Okay. Mm.
Actually, the bed partner actually has, like, you know, the John says, relationship issues.
Mm-hmm.
So because one partner suffers from sleep problem, the other partner has to suffer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So usually the sufferer do not know that they have any sleep problems. The bed partner does. So the bed partners will alert them. Hey, you're snoring at night. Or hey, I saw you stop breathing. Or sometimes the sufferer itself gets a bit moody because they're not having enough sleep. So fights tend to happen. And, you know, the other party have to be more tolerant.
Yeah. I actually had a couple, I remember, who the husband was denying that he was snoring. And I just suggested recording it, you know, so that you have the proof. And it's interesting that Paul Rosenblatt also talks about that.
Yes.
So long as the couple both agree to do that, I think it's a good idea. I didn't know I snored. So in Hawaii, I was sharing a room with another professor, and he said he didn't snore. I said I didn't snore. We both told each other that we both snored.
But how do you bring it up with your bed partner if you think he or she has a sleeping problem that's affecting you? Obviously, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Couples aren't able.
Yeah.
The person, the bed partner, isn't able to share it.
I think most couples, they are able to bring it up. They are able to talk
just
about it.
Just the one person doesn't want to believe the other.
Yeah, that's when it happens.
That's when we ask them to record.
Yeah, that's right. Come in and sleep for a night, right? We'll show you.
Or record on a handphone how that's loud right. They snore or whatever things they did at night when they were sleeping. So you just, I always tell the bed partner, you just record, next morning, show it to them.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them still deny, so...
Okay, so snoring seems to be a big problem.
Oh, definitely.
Anything else?
The first symptom that will come out would be snoring at night. And then in the morning, they'll feel tired and lethargic. So that will be a symptom that their sleep quality is affected. Yeah. So they have to monitor it. If it start to affect their life, like work environment, because when we sleep deprived, right, when it gets up to a point when we can't concentrate at work, we tend to be drowsy all the time and we can't concentrate in making decisions. Sometimes we make the wrong decisions or get moody and angry all the time. So we need to know the telltale signs.
Yep. I mean, I think I have met enough people who tell me straight out they know they're not getting proper sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the stresses of life and could be as basic as sleep hygiene, as Amy had mentioned.
Definitely.
Do you feel that more and more people seem to be having sleep issues?
Yes, they do.
It cannot all be because of our handphones.
It's because of bad sleep hygiene, actually. Really, bad sleep hygiene. And the fact that, you know, Malaysia runs 24 hours, so we don't recommend to have heavy food at least 3 or 4 hours before bedtime because the body needs to rest.
Mm-hmm.
If really you get hungry at night, maybe you could have a snack, maybe a sandwich or crackers with milk, Milo. That will do. Not heavy like nasi lemak or mee goreng just before bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
it's not good for the body, not good for the stomach.
That sounds just like us. Yes. And that's why you have this 24-hour, yeah, 24-hour food outlets really not helping in all aspects. We are discussing sleep issues and how it impacts your relationship. Please give us a call if you have a question. Amy Ho, a registered polysomnographic technologist in the studio, together with Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist. We'll come back after a quick market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our health and living segment today, Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist in the studio, together with Amy Ho, a registered polysomnographic technologist from the ASEAN Sleep Research and Competence Center at the University of Malaya Specialist Center. I think Amy has gone through enough for us, many of us, to know that the reason we're not getting enough sleep is simply because of something as simple called sleep hygiene. And Amy, earlier on when I spoke to you, you also said that sleep issues are very multidisciplinary, right?
Yes.
As you said, it could have been an ENT problem, it could be a psychiatric problem, it can be neurological, it can also affect children. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, children... definitely, as I said earlier, snoring is not normal. So if the child snores, it's time to give them a chat and see what's causing the snoring. Because for kids, sleep is very important. It actually, when they sleep, they will be growing, and that's where they tend to relearn whatever they had learned in the morning. So sleep is important to them. So if the sleep quality is disrupted, then it will affect their school. You know, the grades will fall, and then worst comes to worst, their growth will be affected. They'll be stunted. You know, like a 10-year-old kid will look like a 5-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And of course, for kids, if they are sleep deprived, they are actually opposite of the adults. Because adults, when they are sleep deprived, we become tired, lethargic. For kids, when they are sleep deprived, they actually become hyperactive. And cannot listen to you, cannot sit still. So that's one of the telltale signs that they're not having enough sleep.
Yeah. What about children? For you, Dr. John Ben?
Yeah. The thing that I hear a lot is, especially with babies, you know, you have different parenting styles across cultures. You know, Asian parents, I think, typically like to have the newborns or babies sleeping with them. And that can become an issue. I find that with just plain Asian parents, you know, Malaysian parents, local parents, they're okay with that. But when you have mixed marriages, you know, or people with a different mindset, westernized mindsets, they want to have the parents sleeping alone, not with the kids present. In fact, I was just walking in and one of your producers said, talk about the kids. You know, yes. That's the problem. Yeah.
So how did you cope? I mean, your wife isn't Asian. How did you cope?
Well, I went with her. I was very clear that she's the mother. She's the primary caregiver. And I was okay with that. We had a little crib next to our bed when they were very, very young, so just so that we can hear them. And when she was breastfeeding the first couple of months, you know, sometimes the baby would sleep right next to her. But then the next step quickly was to the crib next to our bed. And then by the time they were about 6 months, they were already in the next room. Yeah, in their own rooms.
Now, what's so bad about sharing your room with your children? We all do it.
Mm-hmm. What happens is the relationship can get compromised, right? And when they're sleeping together, intimacy can be affected. And when a couple is already having problems, and then that gets in the way, sometimes it's a little bit of a breather so that they don't have to deal with their problems. You know, they can sort of stay apart a little bit, but then not dealing with the problems, and then it grows. It can become quite a huge issue. So what I hear a lot is when it's time for the children to move to their own bedrooms, now they're 3, 4, but one is still holding on to them in the bedroom. They're 3 or 4 years old, right? And then when you look at the relationship, you realize that the children are being used as an excuse, right, not to deal with a couple issues. So becoming mindful and being open to talking about that right from the beginning is really important.
Okay. G on the line, you have a question?
Yeah. I have this tendency. While in bed, I will either switch to my iPad or my iPhone, and it acts as an like a pacifier. It tires my eye, and then I go to sleep. I don't know whether it's all right or not.
Okay, thank you very much, Jay. Bye bye.
Sure.
That's for you, Amy.
All right.
It's working for G.
Well, he's what that will be called as depending on what he's doing on the iPad. If he's listening to music and stuff like that, it will call as white noise. For some people, the body will be habituate. That means get used to that noise, and it helps them to fall asleep. Helps them. But the thing is this, the iPad will be running when we are sleeping. So if you're watching a movie with loud noise suddenly in the middle of the movie, it wakes us up.
Yep.
Yeah. So it definitely disrupts the sleep as well. So
okay.
For G, I suggest that when you do feel you want to fall asleep, please switch off your iPad. Don't let it go on running.
Okay.
Because it will disrupt sleep.
Sure.
Why, you know, I would say, ask G, why don't you try for a week, you know, without your phone and see whether you can adjust to it?
Mm. Which is probably better sleep hygiene than...
That's what Amy says.
Yes. It needs to be trained. You can't... some people, they can cut off that element immediately. Some people seems to be addicted to it, so they have to be gradually letting go of the element. So yeah, it depends on the person whether mm-hmm. they can cut off the bad habit then or they have to gradually let it go.
Because what you're saying is we do know that having these technological devices
definitely
is more disruptive than helpful.
Definitely, yeah. It is.
Yeah, it could possibly be having an effect on G's quality of sleep without him realizing.
Well, if he managed to cut the iPad off, definitely, it will definitely improve on his sleep onset. That means he'll better be able to sleep earlier.
Okay, all right, got it. Sometimes, Dr. John Ben, the problems yeah. when couples share a bed could just be as simple as different temperature preferences.
Yes. been there, still there sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there too.
Yeah. Yes. So how do you think this could lead to more serious problems, and how do we deal with personal preferences when it comes to temperature?
Yeah. When the relationship bond is secure and safe, typically most couples can talk through it. An extra blanket, for instance, you know, since there's some kind of a compromise that can come together. It's just that when you have problems and stressors come in and you're not dealing with it, then it's, you know, are you squeezing the toothpaste from the end or the middle?
Yes.
It becomes that. But this is more than just where you squeeze the toothpaste. This affects your functioning, your biological health. So it can be a real serious issue, and it's not petty by any means. Yeah, especially okay. if someone is raising it.
So compromise, always the best solution. But what's coming through from you really is these issues become bigger when the relationship is not grounded well
mm-hmm.
or there are some issues already brewing.
Yes.
So couples who yes. have it all right, this probably will not be an issue because they would have worked it out themselves.
Yes.
Snoring, they would have gotten help. Anger, they will find some way of dealing with it in a productive way.
Yes.
Sleeping temperatures will be solved. But if there is a problem, then it is a problem.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you think that as human beings, we are actually meant to share a bed?
Boy, that's a question for the anthropologist. Let me find the anthropologist inside of me.
We sent you these questions.
Well,
didn't
if
you
you're going to
them?
Couple, if you're going to couple, and you're going to be intimate with each other, and falling asleep is a typical outcome, you know, after sexual intimacy, then the answer is yes. You know, but if you're having problems or you need to deal with things differently, there's so many cultures. You know, it's hard for me to say a definite yes, you know, a universal answer. So I'll go back to Amy. Are you waking up fresh and energetic, or are you having difficult sleep for many, many, many days in a row? Would that be correct? That would be sort of, you know, the benchmark. And then
yes.
for me, yeah, and for me is the relationship temperature. you know, how are you feeling in terms of safety and connection with each other? Not just the couple, but the family as a whole.
Because of sleep and the deprivation of that and how it affects everybody, really.
Yes.
Okay. What's your advice, Amy, to get a good sleep and, you know, be happy bed partners?
Get a good sleep hygiene. Make sure you get a good sleep hygiene. And, of course, compromise with your bed partner in terms of temperature or lighting, you know?
Yes, lighting.
Atmosphere. It's a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Throw that television out of the room if you have one, Dr. Right. John Ben.
I think it's good to start off with understanding what is good sleep hygiene. We have enough research, I believe, to know that this is the basic of healthy. And try to understand that and then begin to practice that. That's sort of the baseline. And then secondly, to decipher, is this a sleep issue or is it a deeper relational issue that's going on? Right? If it's a sleep issue, that can be solved. If it's a relational issue, that too can be solved, but with different approaches. Mm-hmm. One with a sleep specialist and the other one with a relationship specialist.
Yeah. So you really need to figure out which one.
Yes.
Which the problem really is. Okay, thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts with
me
today. Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, together with Amy Ho, a registered polysomnographic technologist at the ASEAN Sleep Research and Competence Center, University of Malaya Specialist Center. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.